to another edition of Fantasy Baseball Elite. We are here at FantasyGuru.com, part of the Draft Guide. Although this is a completely free podcast, hopefully you guys are enjoying it. My name is Jeff Manns, by the way, FantasyGuru.com, GuruElite.com, at Jeff underscore Manns on Twitter, the Jeff Manns and other social media outlets. The star of the show, though, because there is no more elite fantasy baseball player in the world than the one and only Ray Flowers. How are you, Ray?
I got a fly, Jeff, that is buzzing around my head here in the office. I hope you can't hear it here. I assume you can't, but he sounds like a big one, and he's a little frustrating to me right now.
You have had – I thought, isn't that what Dexter Kitty's for? Isn't Dexter Kitty supposed to, like, eat flies or something?
Do they eat flies?
I don't know. What? I don't know.
I've seen – at the Annoy Dexter me. Kitty, by the way. No, it's at the Dexter Kitty. Let's get it correct. Ugh. And everyone should know that he's about to become a spokesman for Arm & Hammer's Clump & Seal. So you need to get in on the ground floor right now before he really blows up.
Clump & Seal?
Clump & Seal, yeah, in the kitty litter.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, on Sirius XM, the Clump & Seal kitty litter. He's about to be their spokesman. He's a big deal, Jeff. You should get in on the ground floor before, it's too late.
No. Yeah, I'm out on all things Dexter Kitty. I'm not a cat guy. Just not that guy.
Are you a cat guy, Jeff?
No. No. Not my thing. I'm a dog guy more than a cat guy. But nevertheless, Ray, we've got a lot to talk about today. Mm. Obviously, follow Ray at Baseball Guys on Twitter. You can check out the 2019 Fantasy Baseball Draft Guide available right now over at FantasyGuru.com. And I want everybody to understand something, that when we talk about the draft guide, and Ray and I are just conditioned to talk draft guide because we've been in this industry for so long, but this isn't just about the draft. Fantasy baseball in 2019 requires so much more than just a good draft. You can't really – I don't know of another sport where the draft is less important than in fantasy baseball. I really don't. I think that you either win or lose in fantasy baseball based on your moves during the season. There's just too much. Disable list, pitchers moving around, everybody, lineup changes, off days, restish, all these kinds of things. If you're not on top of your game in fantasy baseball, you're going to fall behind the pack. And that's why this year at Fantasy Guru, Ray, we've decided, all right, draft guide, all that good stuff, fine. But we have full season service all the way through the end of the year, in through the playoffs even, over at Fantasy Guru. It's not just a draft guide anymore.
Yeah, and so people, I have heard this question from folks, where's your draft guide? I can't find the draft guide. I click on this and all I get is articles. Yeah, you get the articles, you get everything. That's the whole point, like you're saying. It's not, there isn't a draft guide anymore. It's full season coverage at Fantasy Guru. So in essence, the entire preseason is your draft guide. So there it is. You get access to everything. You get the free articles, you get the pay articles. If you're in the VIP section, let's hope that's what you sign up for. You get a chance to go on the live stream. You get a chance to interact with us as staff. We'll have, podcasts for that moving forward. We'll have, the ability to interact with live streams. Like, we're really going to amp up kind of the interactive experience with the VIP package. But whether you get the VIP package or the standard package, you get everything. And that is, in essence, all we do in the preseason, giving you a massive draft guide.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So very good stuff, and it's already got hundreds and hundreds of pages and articles and rankings, all different formats and tools, and the chat room and live streams and podcasts. In addition to this one, this one's free for everybody, but we got strategy session podcasts that you've done, Vlad Sedler, Benny Ricciardi, in on those as well. So check it out. But Ray, we have some interesting news as we record this. Now, I'm about to head out to the Super Bowl in Atlanta, Georgia, site of Super Bowl 53. I'll be covering that for Sirius XM and doing a lot of stuff that. So we won't have, you and I won't have another podcast of this nature until I'm back, unless you do it without me, which you're a scumbag and a jerk and a mean person. But
maybe I will.
You probably will. But listen to this, though. But we have news right now that potentially – Bryce Harper has agreed to a deal, a long-term deal with the Philadelphia Phillies. Now, this was big this morning. We've been waiting, trying to get this latest news, so we didn't record it. Nothing worse than, like, we record this, and then we have to, well, he signed there.
12 minutes later.
Yeah. Exactly. So, it reportedly right now, John Heyman came out and said, well, there's unsubstantiated reports. This is not a true story. It's sort of more rumor and innuendo. There's been sightings of him at a at Philadelphia Airport. There's all these different places that they supposedly have seen Bryce Harper. Nothing is substantiated as of this recording. We couldn't hold out any longer. Ray Flowers, if Bryce Harper were to go to Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
what would his fantasy value become there? Good landing spot, bad landing spot, what would they get?
Yeah, really good. I think that's a – I mean, first of all, we've talked about Bryce Harper last week on the free podcast. People can listen to it. It's on Podbean. It's on iTunes if you haven't heard it. You're obviously probably aware since you're listening to this now.
Hope so.
Also on the website. Bryce Harper is, in my opinion, a great talent that doesn't always produce anywhere near the level of expectations or assumptions. So moving to Philadelphia would be a good thing for him. It is a good place to hit. There is no doubt about that. For lack of a certain way, I think he's a Philadelphia kind of guy. Like, he's rough. He's kind of outlandish. He's forward. You know, he's not shy. I don't think pressure or anything like that would hit him. You look at the lineup they have, and, I mean, if they were to add him to it, all of a sudden it looks much, much better. I mean, Andrew McCutchen is there, and he's a solid performer. You've obviously got, you know, Cesar Hernandez at the top from speed. You've got Rhys Hoskins for the power. You've got Gene Segura with that all-around ability. I think Mikhail Franco has kind of gotten a bad rap in some circles. Odubel Herrera is not great, but pretty good. All of a sudden, Jeff, you get a lineup that may lack superstars if you don't include Harper or Hoskins in that group, but it's a very long lineup. And one that would be very difficult to pitch to, which would leave him with a lot of value, I would think.
Yeah, and a good ballpark movement there as well. You mentioned no superstars, but yeah, I mean, Rhys Hoskins, he's close to superstar.
Depends how you define it, yeah.
He's right there for you, and it would be a great signing, obviously. A lot of people expect him to go here. Whether this particular rumor is true and it comes through in the next couple of days, we don't know. But let me ask you a question about Bryce Harper just in general, Ray. Why hasn't he been able to sustain his numbers of, what was that, 2016?
Mm-hmm.
That where he was just, you know, or 2015, where, you know, he went 42-99 and all that. Why hasn't he been able to sustain those types of numbers?
I think that there is an assumption, especially with young players, that once they attain a level of statistical production, that that's the level that they're going to just produce at. And in fact, most people would assume in the case of Bryce Harper that that season in 2015 was just the first of 10 like that were coming. Those numbers he put up are Hall of Fame numbers. And even Hall of Fame players go look at their ball cards. Even Hall of Fame players didn't always produce Hall of Fame numbers on an individual season. He did everything he possibly could in 2015 as well as he could possibly do it. He was on the field. He didn't miss games. He hit the ball deep. He produced in the batting average category. He did everything kind of optimal levels. I mean, Jeff, a 460 on base percentage, that's Ted Williams and Barry Bonds kind of stuff. Like, that's absurd. That's out of control. An 1,100 OPS is, you know, that puts you in the all-time greats as well. You're getting inducted the first year the Hall of Fame opens. You know, you look at a 319 isolated power mark, same thing. You look at a 369 batting average balls in play, same thing. And you start going through, again, all the individual components, and it was basically a season that, you know, one tenth of 1% of the players who've ever played could produce. I mean, it was a phenomenal season, but everything was at optimal levels. And expecting any player to perform at optimal levels, even if it's Odubel Cabrera or whatever it is, expecting him to be a 100% of who they are year after year is just a losing battle, Jeff.
By the way, knowing Ray Flowers the way I do, folks, this, you want to know what tilts Ray out of control? What tilts Ray out of control is that Bryce Harper had 100 RBI last year. Why does that tilt Ray out of control?
Because by one.
In the year that we talked about, 2015, he had 99. So, Ray, what would you tell everybody going in every February, March, April? What would you always say about Bryce Harper?
In 6 years, Bryce Harper has one season with 30 home runs. He has one season with 100 runs, and he doesn't have a single season with 100 RBIs.
And now he has two with 100 runs and one with 100 RBIs and another with 30 home runs, by the way, last year. So he played 159 games last year. So the durability questions are sort of, I don't know if they're out the window, obviously not, but he's only 26 years old.
How about the performance questions, Jeff?
Like specifically what, though? Because you mentioned 460 on base, you're talking about Ted Williams. I mean, you're really talking about Bonds and Williams. That's it. 393 last year, 413 the year before. I mean, good Lord. That is a massive impact. And one of the things we're seeing, Ray, and we put it out to people on Fantasy Guru at Fantasy Guru site, at Baseball Guys, at Jeff_Manns on Twitter. We ask people for some questions. We're going to get to some mailbag questions for today later on. But one of the things they're talking about, what stats to look at. And one of the stats I look at, I pretty much discredit batting average almost across the board.
Well, I understand that, but if you're playing in a 5x5 league, this guy hasn't hit 250 two of the 3 years. That's horrible. Yeah, even in this day and age, that's below league average.
But, Ray, how do you explain 330, 243, 319, 249?
Yeah, in seven of his seasons, he's under 275. That? So he's a solid batting average guy at best.
But, okay.
And I'm not talking about his overall fantasy game. I'm talking about, his overall real game.
We're
talking
meanwhile, about but you look at it and you look at all his on-base percentage, 368, mm-hmm. 344, 460 is crazy. 373, 413, 393. That is stable. That's not. This guy is getting on base. He's impacting his team in a very positive way.
Yes.
Whether he gets 90 RBI, whether he gets 100 on the nose, whether it's 99, whether it's 29 home runs or 39 home runs. 95 runs or 103 runs. He's impacting this team and your fantasy numbers in a very valuable way. I think the batting average is the one category that I just can't figure out with him. And I suppose it has to do with the batting average for balls in play because we obviously see a huge correlation in there. But I can't quite figure out why the dramatic swings. And it's on in this every other week spectrum that – Is it going to leverage out? Is he ever going to, instead of hitting 330 and 320, is he ever just going to hit 295? Just split the difference? Is he ever going to hit 285? Like, is there ever going to be some consistency in that one particular metric? Because if he did, the rest of the numbers are all fantastic, right? Whether he gets to the benchmarks or not.
Yeah. Well, I would say three of the last 5 years, he's been under seven steals. So let's give him 10 steals and say that's where he is. Okay, fine. He can get double-digit steals. But this idea that he's a producer in that category, it's really not.
Yeah, I don't think he's a stolen-base guy either.
Yeah.
To
yeah,
me, Bryce Harper, he's too big. I know he's athletic and everything. Mm-hmm. But granted, 26 is not old. But especially when teams start investing 10 years, $300 million in you, it's almost going to be team mandated that you're not going to run as much. They just don't want – they don't need you pulling your thumb tendon sliding to second base. So – I agree with you with the steals. Okay. He's not going to be a major impact guy there either.
This year, by the way, and people I'm sure know this, we're using the Guru Elite site as DFS only fantasy guru for season long. Last year was different. So last year I wrote an article over there, is Bryce Harper a superstar? I wrote it in July. And in the article, I compared Bryce Harper to Justin Upton. And guess what? Same guy.
Yeah.
Same guy. And I went through the numbers per game. Per 162 games since 2012, since 2014, since 2006. They are the same guy, never spoken of in the same breath at all. And that's amazing. The last 6 years from, 2012 to 2017, the fantasy value that Justin Upton earned and that Bryce Harper earned was $1 apart.
Wow.
In the 5x5.
$1 apart. When was that
from? 2012 to 2017.
Oh, you're including the big season.
Yes.
Usually.
Okay.
I know Ray Flowers. That's why you need me on these podcasts, everybody. I need to balance out Ray. I know all Ray's numbers tricks, by the way.
So if we add 2018, the difference is probably $2.
Wow.
Okay. They're the same. And this is over, again, 7 years. They're the same guy. My point is no one ever drafts Justin Upton expecting him to 290 because we know he's not a 290 hitter, right? We take our 270 or whatever. That's who Bryce Harper is. Bryce Harper in two of 7 years is at 275. His problem is that he gets in funks, and it's not a funk of being unable to control the strike zone. Because as you correctly noted, Jeff, the guy's always getting on base. I mean, he's phenomenal at doing that.
And that's why I think just that part of this whole equation for me is what gives Harper credibility over the Justin Uptons, if you will. And Upton's, he gets on base decently as well, but a big difference between 390 steady and 340 steady.
Yeah, but there's also a difference of four rounds on draft day.
Yeah, that's
which is, something you've got to factor in. Bryce Harper gets into funks where he rolls over on pitches. He gets into funks where he tries to pull everything. We saw that happen last year. If you look at his pull rate last year, it was 9 percentage points above where it was the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about batting average, I mean, that's a pretty obvious sign that when the guy uses the whole field, guess what? Right, when he pulls the ball, we worry about it a little bit. Now, he did counteract that a little bit in 2015, but again, I think we have to one off 2015 because I don't think he's ever going to have a season like that again, even if he has great years. So basically, he rolls over on the ball and he goes into funks where he, I don't know if he questions himself or whatever it is, but like Barry Bonds is the example that's easy to draw up in the recent past. Bonds would have these games where he'd get three strikes and he'd hit two line drives on the three strikes and he would just be locked in, and he was okay with that. He understood that. I don't know if Harper's willing to accept that at 26. You know, there are times where he expands the strike zone a little bit. There are, again, at times where he's rolling over the ball. He's trying to do stuff with the outside pitch and just hitting a single or line drive into the gap in left field. He tries to jack it to right. I think that will come with maturity. And if he just does that one simple thing, then he's a 290 hitter, Jeff. So it's not that far away, and it's not impossible to think it could happen this year. It just hasn't really to this point.
It's a larger topic, too, that I wanted to discuss with you, Ray, today, in that with Harper and Machado, for that matter. And as of this podcast, it's not official that Harper's in Philadelphia. One of the things I saw last – you such a good point, what Ray just brought up with Harper selling out to try to pull the ball and things like that, and how he could be a lot better when he's not trying to sell out for power. I felt very strongly, especially early in 2018, that Harper was selling out for power. Like, he wanted to hit 50 home runs because he knew he was going into this free agent. There was so much pressure on him for the entirety of the season, and it felt like he just was pressing. And, you know, I was actually pretty proud of the kid for how he finished up and how he got back on track after really a kind of miserable start last year. So you're right. Here's the thing with pulling the ball, not pulling the ball. In a place like Citizens Bank Ballpark, you can hit the ball out of the park the other way. You can lace it into the gaps and pick up a lot of extra bases. I feel like he thought he needed to barrel everything in order to get out of Nationals Park. So I wonder if, depending on where he goes, you know, how much that adds to some of these overall numbers. And obviously it'll be an impactful one. And I want to talk about first round value just overall, because for one, between Upton and Harper, the other point I want to make is Upton's 32 right now. Harper's 26, pretty big difference there as well. So, but no matter where is there anywhere he's going to go, whether it's Philadelphia or not? And same with Manny Machado, right? Where the atmosphere is going to be worse for his fantasy value than they were in their 2018 spots, meaning Machado in Baltimore /LA, not a friendly hitting environment whatsoever in LA. Good lineup, so you get a little bit of a bump there. Baltimore is a cesspool, we know that. And then Harper at Nationals Park, that's a big ballpark to try to hit 40-plus home runs on a regular basis. I don't see either one of these guys losing value no matter where they sign. So why has the industry and the current ADP, Ray, sort of penalizing both of these guys for that?
It's a great question. We're doing the FSTA draft still, as you know, because you're involved with it with me as well.
We did, 10 rounds in 7 days? Yeah. Or 7 rounds in 7 days. That's right. One round a day.
Round a day is kind of what we're going at. And, we're in the 18th round, and I grabbed Marwin Gonzalez there. And the reason I bring that up is I think it's the same thing with Marwin Gonzalez. He'll sign, he'll get a role with the team, and his ADP will go up 20 spots. It won't jump, 100 spots, but it'll go up a bit because there'll be some certainty. I think that will also happen in some instances with Machado and Harper. But as we also saw in that draft, Anthony Perry of Fantistics took both Harper and Machado at the end of the 14-team mixed league, end of the first round, start of the second round. And he was, queried about it on the broadcast. And he basically said, look, I'm not really worried. And I would agree with that. I'm not really worried. And you said it, Jeff. These guys are the foundational pieces of the offense. It's going to be pretty rare that they're going to – I mean, what team are they going to sign with the number three offensive option, right? It's not going to happen. Maybe they're 1A, 1B, okay, but they could also just be the number one. So the offense is going to be built around them. I am not concerned overly. There's very few spots where I'd be overly concerned about these guys ending up. The obvious ones. You don't want to end up in San Diego, San Francisco, that kind of thing. But even so, it's not like their value would dissipate. They're still elite talents. They're still young. They still have got the power to hit the ball out all over the place. Both guys, we just talked about Harper. Machado, too, has got a good approach at the plate. Got some athleticism as well. Neither one of these guys should be penalized, I would think, signing with A or B. I think if anything, their value goes up if they end up in Philadelphia, as you're saying, and people look at the lineup and they look at the park. Then we start seeing Harper go, instead of 15th, Harper starts going 8th. So I think they can go up based upon where they sign. I don't think they could go down, Jeff.
Well, they shouldn't be going down. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, these guys slip into the second round. It's one of those things where fantasy baseball players, Ray, are so strange in that
we thank you.
Once you know, not you, it's both of us the same, but you're very conservative, as we've talked about before. A lot of fantasy baseball players are seemingly very conservative. And I say seemingly because it doesn't translate into the open market. Because when we're talking about drafts, whether it's this FSGA draft that we're doing right now, or even into NFBC drafts and look at their ADP, and guys like, they're so super conservative. And then I see Ronald Acuna and Trey Turner, jumping up all these spots, and Jacob deGrom creeping into the first round all of a sudden. And you start thinking like, okay, well, these are pretty aggressive moves, in my opinion. These aren't the conservative moves. I see Jose Altuve, who you took in that first round, but he's 15th overall in the NFBC. And it's like, all right, to me, that's a more conservative move because he's done it longer. But that's not the way these guys go. And so what I'm asking, like this, when we look at the first round, and you and I addressed Trout versus Betts before,
right.
What happened to some of these old standbys? It used to be Paul Goldschmidt, Jose Altuve, even a little further back, Miguel Cabrera, Hanley Ramirez, Andrew McCutchen, Carlos Gonzalez. These guys were first-round picks year after year for a while, and now they're not even thought about anymore, and some rightfully so. But a guy like Paul Goldschmidt, you wonder, like, okay, St. Louis hurts him, but then the humidor, isn't he still a phenomenal player? Does he deserve that dramatic of a fall off? Like, what happened to Goldie? What happened to Altuve? Why has their value dropped so suddenly?
Well, it's funny, I had someone ask me, are you concerned about Jose Ramirez? Because for the last month and a half last year, he was terrible. And I said, I asked the question on Twitter. I said, yeah, what about Paul Goldschmidt? He was horrible for the first month and a half. Are you concerned with him? And the guy's like, well, no. And I'm like, well, then it's that they both had 4.5 great months. It was just flip-flopped in the order. Like, the problem we all run into, all of us, even the ones of us that are giving the advice, you and I, is you have to practice epoche. You have to bracket your personal beliefs and thoughts when you're analyzing something. And as much as we all say, hey, man, don't buy the storyline that it was, doom and gloom, have faith in the guy. The skills are still there. Comes in the draft. Guess what? That guy ends up going to 14 picks later than he did last year. Like you said, same guy. Like, what's the difference? Like, I'm seeing Goldschmidt drop, and I'm like, just fingers crossed. Like, drop, man. I'm hoping he's falling to me in the second round of this draft. Right. Same thing with Jose Altuve. Now, there are some players, Altuve being a good example. He's the guy drafted in the first round. He's a little guy, and though he's, been a 20 home run hitter, we all still look at it and go, it's like, I don't think anyone's really buying that he's a 29 home run guy. So it's like, he's aging a bit. He had the knee issues, so people are worried about the steals. So you can make a little bit of a case to let him drop. I understand that. In the case of Goldschmidt, I think there's less of a reason because the humidor did suppress offense last year. He's out of that environment. As you noted, he produced very well. He's in with a club that traditionally wins. He's with the club that makes moves. He's with the club that's going to have a good line. I mean, it's all these things. Bottom line is this. As much as we say don't let last year color your opinion, a lot of people do.
Yes.
And instead of letting last year color your opinion, like we talk about in the preseason, the draft guide, the product at Fantasy Guru, it's about the skills and the opportunity that these players have. The skills don't always – a guy could be a 30 home run hitter and hit 25 as easy as he hits 35. Same guy. But if the guy hits 35 last year versus 25 last year, there's a 3-round difference in his cost, or 4-round, 5-round difference in his cost. Look at the skills, not the end results.
And, I mean, obviously great advice when it comes to that. So, Ray, let me ask you then. I'll say this, though. Here's the way I look at almost the entire world, Ray. You know me pretty well. I look at the whole world like this. Like, I get that when it comes to first-round picks, this guy can do this, this guy can do that. Everybody could do whatever. I look at the ones who are less likely to bust. Like I just mentioned Miguel Cabrera, Carlos Gonzalez, Hanley Ramirez, Andrew McCutchen, Ryan Braun. These are guys who were first-round picks for a lot of years or for multiple years that when you drafted them a few years ago, even last year, you thought, okay, I know what I got. I got an entity here. I've got this much production, XYZ. And it obviously blew up massively. And I am looking in the first round to completely avoid that. I just don't want to screw it all up. That's all I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. When you start selling out, especially in fantasy baseball, for, oh, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to sell out because this guy's going to have three, he had, you know, 11 more home runs last year than another guy that at the similar spot. And when you start selling out for, oh, this guy had four more steals than the other, you're also imposing most often more risk. And it's that risk tolerance that people are seemingly not aware of. They fall in love with a certain player, they a certain stat line. Sometimes, especially in our industry, they fall in love, oh my God, this guy's fly ball rate or exit velocity was off the map and so on and so forth. And they fall in love with that. So they make a case for it, ignoring the obvious risk that comes with it. And it kind of drives me crazy with that. So when I'm looking at first round picks, I'm saying, okay, who's the least likely to blow up? And as I looked at this draft here in particular, Altuve was on my list. Arenado, who fell to eighth overall, was on that list. Right. I'm not touching a pitcher in the first round. I just can't do it. I know Sale's done it for a long time and Scherzer as well, but not, you know, Kershaw. I mean, how many years do we go, well, is Kershaw number one? Here's the case for him. And that, and then what happens? When it falls to the pitcher, it falls dramatically. It falls hard for pitching. And that's why I don't want that early. But that's one of the reasons, like with Yelich, I know there's regression coming, you know, and that's why he was one of the guys I liked. But and even Machado and Harper, and, you know, to sort of bring this full circle, I'm looking at it like these guys, they're going to produce their numbers. And no matter where they go, they're going to produce. It might not be exactly first round value. It may be third round value, maybe fourth round value, but they're not going to fall off the face of the earth the way Miguel Cabrera, Carlos Gonzalez, Braun, Hanley, Kutch, Kershaw, and all these guys have done.
Yeah, and in the draft guide, actually in the research section of the MLB package at Fantasy Guru, there's the article, Does the First Round Matter? And I go through a bunch of permutations. They're talking about, well, it really doesn't matter. And the reasons I give are numerous, but let's just hit on a couple of the points. To avoid drafting the wrong guy, do not draft an injury-prone player, period. That should be obvious. Some people struggle with that. That means for me, that personally, a guy like Bryce Harper, not touching him. I'm not. You mentioned earlier that he's been healthier. Yeah. But the ups and downs with him, it's why I wouldn't take Giancarlo Stanton in the first round, et cetera, et cetera. Second, don't draft a pitcher in the first round. That goes exactly to what you're saying. Some people agree with that completely, some so-so, but they're just any little ding with the pitcher costs them two or three starts drops you out of the first round in most instances. Third, do not draft a player who was in the top 15 last year for the first time. Okay, there's less than a 20% chance that a guy that is a first-round value the first time is also a first-round value in the following season. And that would include a guy like Christian Yelich. I agree with you. I don't personally think Christian Yelich matches his numbers last year. He's also not going to go back to 2015 numbers. So he's a very stable, safe guy. And like you said, if he's a second-round guy, who cares? It's fine. But be cautious about that. And then finally, the point I bring up all the time, understand that two-thirds of the players that are taken in the top 15 this year are not going to be top 15 guys. So do what you can to eliminate the pitchers, the injury-prone guys, and the guys that did it for the first time last year. That then leaves you with a smaller group of players to choose from. But understand, that's still not the answer. And that goes back to the point we've been making on this podcast since we started. There's smarter ways to do it versus less smart ways to do it, but there's no quote-unquote answer that's always right when we're talking first-round draft picks.
Well, it comes down to the basic premise of make each and every draft pick count. And it goes back to a point I made at the beginning of the show, and I heard you, you did one of those little things, and I can't tell if it was just you getting your prostate examined again or whatever. But by the way, that's a true story, by the way, everybody. Like, Ray had a prostate exam today. You had a prostate exam today, earlier today, Ray.
I did. Yeah, many of them.
Luckily, you didn't answer your phone.
Correct. That would have been.
Did he have both hands on your shoulders, or what was the deal with that?
No, one hand was where it was supposed to be, and the other one was around my kneecap.
No, around your kneecap. What's he doing?
He was making, I don't know,
roping a steer. Like, yeah. What's going on? You're not on vacation here, Doc. So everything's good. What did he say? Holy God. Anything like that? And I always wonder about that when they give you the exam. Like, oh, boy.
I haven't seen that before.
I haven't seen that before. Good for you. Like, what the kind of things do you want him to say during the process? What was the – when he snaps the glove on, I'm assuming he used the glove?
Yeah. Yes, Jeff, there was.
He didn't just spit in his hand.
No, he didn't go.
Okay.
No, there was none of that.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right, making sure. So you're okay. Everything's good with you, right?
Everything's good with me. Hi, Mom. No, everything's good with me. Yeah. His family's listening. Jeff brought this up. This wasn't my idea.
No, no, your mom's going to hate
she's
me.
She's not going to listen to this.
No, she's not going to listen to this garbage. No. But yeah, so that's a true statement, but though, mm-hmm. by the way, going to the prostate exam.
Yeah, is there a reason for that?
I've had a number of those. I don't know why that just came out. What the hell were we talking about?
I don't even remember. We were talking about first round and not making poor decisions, and then you transitioned over to prostate testing.
Yeah, it just circled into my mind. The
rectum's on your mind today, Jeff, a lot.
It hurt him. My rectum. Well, let's talk about
– You're flummoxed. This is the first time this has ever happened.
No, not really. I know what I just there's a lot. So here's why I am flummoxed. I'll tell everybody. Because
clean?
Yes, I can't keep it clean. Like, we have a clean rating on iTunes and everything else. Mm-hmm. And I have been part of other podcasts before and other stuff. I like to curse. I really do. I'm used to radio and stuff. But, like, this is a perfect time. I have, like, 19 different things to flush my mind. Like, okay, I can say it, but some dirty and foul language in there as well.
Worse, gentlemen, Jeff. I appreciate
worse than
that.
The spit in your hand comment. So, which won't be flagged by iTunes, thank God.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's why. So let me ask you this question, right? Mm-hmm. What's the last episode we talked about Harper versus Trout and all, or Trout versus Mookie Betts?
Right.
Either one we're fine with. You know, mm-hmm. we made arguments, whatever. Mm-hmm. Who should be number three? Not who is number three. Who should be the number three pick? Because in years past, that number two pick has been the one you kind of don't want. This year, I'm looking at number three, and I really don't want that pick. Who would be your number three pick, assuming Trout and Betts are off the board?
Yeah, and I'm going to make you really upset. I don't think there's an answer. And I think it goes back to what I
– There is because you're going to give one.
Well, I'm going to give one, but I don't think there's an answer. I mean, I've written articles. We've talked about this forever. I don't think there is.
There's not a right answer.
There's not a right answer.
Okay.
In the discussion, I think you have to put Nolan Arenado in the discussion, who we both, you know, I was going to draft if he fell one more pick. You were going to draft if he fell past me, which he wouldn't have in that FSTA, FSGA draft. I think Arenado has to be considered there because at least for now, he's a Rocky. He's got the home park. He is arguably the best third baseman of the last 15 or 20 years. Like, mm-hmm. he probably compares right there with Scott Rowland. Like, he's got a Hall of Fame level glove. He's obviously never coming out of the lineup. He never gets hurt. The negative with him is the lack of steals, but everything else is A+. Right. And when you talk about everything being A+, durability, batting average, runs scored, RBIs, home runs, when it's all A+, I'm in. You know, that reliability factor is so big in my mind. So he's in the discussion. I think Christian Yelich is in the discussion. The problem for me is I think he loses 8 to 10 home runs this year. I'm really concerned about – because he doesn't lift the ball. And he led baseball in home run to fly ball ratio last year, and that's just – that's not sustainable in my opinion. I think that Francisco Lindor is in the conversation. We talked about him previously, the fact that his offense is far surpassed anything either one of us ever expected. I was totally wrong on him too. Don't worry, Jeff. I know you admitted it. I'm admitting it too.
Oh, yeah.
I think his teammate Jose Ramirez is also in the discussion.
Well, right now Jose Ramirez is, according to NFBC, is the number three.
I know, right. I think JD Martinez is in the discussion. I would hold him behind, though, because they're very similar. He and Arenado are virtually the same kind of offensive guy, no speed,
different
everything
position.
Else.
Yeah.
Different position, but I do worry about the health of Martinez because we know he's got the foot issues and it's ongoing and we've seen him miss time, so I would scratch him off. And then you could go, if you wanted to be a little aggressive, you could go with Alex Bregman. You could go with Paul Goldschmidt. And I think you could go Jose Altuve. In the end, you can go one of two ways, in my opinion. You can go with the power-speed combo of either one of the Indians, or you can go with the A+ of Arenado. And I think the answer to which one of those three guys it is comes down to what type of league you're in, how many outfielders, corner, middle, how deep is it? Those kind of things, Jeff. But I think all three of those guys, for me, are at the top of the list.
And this goes along with the way I like to build drafts. One of the things I always do, and I do this with football too, as well as baseball, I like to build my drafts from the bottom up, meaning, okay, who do I like in the later rounds? Where are my gems? What players am I targeting? Who's got a bump because they're in a new park? Who is in a different spot in the batting order? Who was injured last year's rebound? Who am I going to get in rounds 16 through 29? You know, where are those guys? Okay, do I have a shortstop? Do I have a second base guy? Do I have a first base guy? Are they all outfielders? How many arms do I have? And then I like to build it up because if I have an abundance at a certain position, let's say it's outfield because it's the easiest. All right, a bunch of outfielders there. Then, all right, we look at that number three overall and say, all right, well, then Arenado, Jose Ramirez, even Lindor, one of these infielders, you know, that makes a little bit more sense because I have a plethora of outfielders I can grab later on. And I could, you know, hopefully get, you know, similar output or some kind of solid production out of them. So that's what I like to do, and that sort of uncovers it. It points the direction where you should be turning your attention in those early rounds. So that's something I like to do as well. I think it is Arenado. To me, it is, and he's ninth overall in NFBC. I think he went ninth in this draft as well, right? And pretty surprising that are people just bored? Or no, he went eighth in our draft. Are people bored with Arenado? Are they worried that he's going to be sold off and away from Coors for a while? Even if you look at the numbers away from Coors, still really, really good.
I mean, the last 4 years, okay? He's gone 297, 40, 126, 104. That's his average the last four seasons. And I know the numbers the last 2 years have been slightly down, but his worst year is 297, 38, 110. Like, that's his worst year, okay? The bottom line is two-part with him. One, I think there is some, you know, been there, done that. Let's do something new. Because, you know, Ronald Acuna, let's take him instead. Oh, he's so much better. Well, like I had someone the other day, I'm in a dynasty league, and I drafted Arenado instead of Vladimir Guerrero. What do you think? And I said, well, Vladimir Guerrero, if he fulfills every expectation placed upon him, becomes who Nolan Arenado is today. So I'm not going to tell you that's a bad idea. No, not at all. I think the second part is, and I go back to the FSTA draft, all we heard in the draft was 200 strikeouts, 200 strikeouts, 200 strikeouts. Everyone was obsessed with getting a pitcher with 200 strikeouts. Mm-hmm. And all we have heard the entirety of the month of January in fantasy baseball is steals are hard to find, steals are hard to find, steals are hard to find, steals are hard to find. So we have talked ourselves out of taking Nolan Arenado, Mr. A-plus, on everything other than steals. We have talked ourselves out of that to take chances on other players, like Ronald Acuna as an example, an immense talent who performed really, really well last year, who were expecting to do a host of things for the first time that he's never come close to doing, play a season, hit 25 home runs, steal 25 bases, yada, yada, yada. Like, you can play it both ways. But as we discussed, the first round is not the area to take risk. The first round is to remove risk and take stability. That's why I think we're both, you know, targeting or mentioning Arenado here as the option. And I would tell people that you can find steals, okay? It's not – you don't want to wait until you're grabbing Roman Quinn in the 23rd round hoping he does something. You don't want to go that far.
Loved him in the movie The Great Outdoors.
Ah. Was he in The Great Outdoors? What are you talking about?
Was Dan Aykroyd's character, Roman.
Was it? I don't remember. Quinn, exactly. Yeah, it's like, threw me off there.
There's like five people that got that reference. And those five people, I want you all to know I love you.
Okay, because I was not one of them. I was not number six.
No, way over.
Totally blew it. John Candy? I totally blew it. But I know the movie. But Arenado doesn't steal bases. You can find that. You can get your Lorenzo Cain's a little bit later in the draft. You can find your Gene Segura's, your Tommy Pham's, you know, these guys that are stealing 15 to 20 bases. I wouldn't just discount Arenado because he doesn't steal bases. That's the wrong thing to do.
So let me go back to something else you said and compare a couple of players, because Jose Ramirez is the current number three guy. And you look at a guy like this, we talked about Lindor. For one, he's shortstop. Like Lindor, I have more faith in than Ramirez. Lindor is one of the best fielding shortstops in the game. And no matter what, he's always going to get a run no matter what. He works through slumps, all that kind of stuff. Jose Ramirez, you know, solid glove, I'll say, you know, solid glove, man. But his numbers last year specifically were so out of whack, 39 home runs and 34 steals. man, I don't see him matching either one of those numbers. Not even coming close to those numbers again, Ray Flowers. And we talked about him. When you break it down, and those are, this is why a guy like Ramirez, I think I have a big advantage in reading, because in playing daily fantasy baseball. Because I will remember he was a clear avoid for a substantial portion of last season. A clear, utter avoid. First 2 weeks of the season, the guy hit under 150 of last year in late March, early April. For the last month of the season, he hit 174. In August, he hit 245. In June, he hit 267. Now, he hit 336 in May. He hit 322 in July. And last 2 weeks in April, he hit 312. I mean, those are, you know, he is hot and cold, just worries the ever-loving hell out of me. For one, a guy who did all this damage, 39 home runs, 34 steals, and hit 270 for the year? Like, that's his go-to? Oh, I worry he's 250 and 26. You know, and if he's then, you know, 20 stolen bases or if not less, which is solid, isn't, you know, not atrocious. But Jose Ramirez hitting 40 home runs is just something I cannot believe in. I will not subscribe to that idea.
Yeah. It depends on your league, too, because he played 16 games at second base. Some leagues are 10 or 15 game qualification. If he picks up that second position in addition to third, he becomes much more interesting. So obviously, check your rules for the setup. We can talk about launch angle. We can talk about swing pass. We can talk about, you know, mechanics and all that. But dude's 5'9", 180 pounds.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, there's only, you know, Joe Morgan's of the world. Yeah. You don't hit 40 home runs. Okay. Ray Durham, you don't hit 40 home runs. It's just not. So, just on the surface, that's why coming into last year when he hit 29, I'm like, look, I'm expecting a great year to hit 25. Like, I just can't see him replicating this. And he goes and hits 10 more. Now, he was insanely hot, as you mentioned. He had ups and downs. He was insanely hot, as you mentioned, for periods of time, and insanely cold. And if you look at the thing that he's done here, he started out his career as hitting the ball the way someone who's 5'9", 180 should. He had a 1.7 ground ball fly ball ratio in 2014. Then it was 1.3, then it was 1.1, then it was 0.9, last year it was 0.7. So what he has done is he has gone from hitting the ball on the ground and on the line, which is, again, I'm sure how he was taught to play baseball the first 25 years of his life, to changing his game to this launch angle thing. He's now hitting fly balls like he's Joey Gallo, okay? And that, you're not going to hit 300 doing that. I mean, he went from 318 to 270, and there's more involved, but I can just basically say, look, the guy upped his fly ball rate by 7%. That went a long way to explaining that, because obviously fly balls are the least likely batted balls to become base hits. So we have in Houghton Ramirez a guy who is selling out, it looks like, it sure appears that way, selling out to hit the ball in the air. We also have seen a guy the last 3 years, here are his pull rates, 39%, 46%, 50% last year. So he's hitting way more balls in the air, and he's hitting way more balls to his pull side. He's selling out for power. The batting average is not going to come back unless he changes that. Even if he maintains the approach he has now, it's extremely unlikely we're going to see him push 40 home runs again. I agree with you, Jeff. So let's say he hits 30 home runs, which again would still be the second best mark of his career. And he doesn't steal 34 bases. Let's say he steals 20 bases, which again, that's like a 3-year average.
It's 17 the year before, 22 the year before that.
Yeah, yeah. So let's say he goes 30-20. No one should complain if he goes 30-20.
Right.
Okay. Now, if last year he was the number 5 guy on the play radar, this year he's number 17, you're going to complain about that? Don't take Jose Ramirez, because that's logically what's going to happen. He's still going to be really, really, really good, but not superb this year.
I looked back at my notes on Ramirez, and the thing about him, good speed, but terrible caught stealing percentage in the minor leagues. So, I mean, his caught stealing percentage is fantastic at the major league level, specifically the last 2 years. Now, did he learn something? Has he picked up? Maybe that's part of it, but he's not a burner by any stretch either, which concerns me. Mm-hmm. He's upped his extra base hits from each of the last 3 years from 60 to 64 to 81 a year ago. Cause that's one thing that everybody says is, well, you know, he had 56 doubles the year before and he turned those into some home runs.
That doesn't work.
Okay.
That doesn't work. Studies prove that's not true.
I know. I mean, that's what those lame the people will always say, well, the doubles, they'll become home runs because you're a little bit thicker and stronger. Okay, sure. But you don't jump from 60 to 80 extra bases in a season with your batting average going down by 40 points. Nope. Yeah, this just doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, the same conversation about Christian Yelich. And let me – I want to run through the Christian Yelich debate with you a little bit here. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that maybe I'm higher on him or not, we'll see. The thing with Christian Yelich that I like, as opposed to Ramirez is fine. It's a bad example probably comparing those two. But one of the things I noticed with Yelich is this, is patience at the plate. He learned, he was a ground ball guy. He was a kind of, I don't want to say slap hitter, but he was a contact hitter in Miami a lot of times. And I'm not talking about ballpark or any of that stuff, which obviously plays a role. What I noticed with Christian Yelich last year is he learned how to capitalize. And it's one of the reasons when I'm scouting players, and I'm looking at prospects, right? And it's where I talked about Harper earlier. The on-base percentage, the amount pitches per plate appearance, it's one of those things that I do that nobody else does in daily fantasy baseball ever. I always look at how well they're seeing the ball. And I will see a spike in pitches per plate appearance and patience. And to me, that's a guy who's more locked in. And you mentioned Williams. You mentioned Bonds historically. Mm-hmm. Look at Frank Thomas. Like, Frank Thomas is kind of the guy that taught me, like, holy cow, this guy will only swing at pitches he can drive and pitches he can hurt. Whether it hits him on the ground, a percentage he will. He'll hit line drives, he'll hit fly balls. He will only offer the pitches that are within that zone. He's got a good control of it. Hitters that have a better control of the strike zone, even when they're a little bit smaller, a little bit more skinny, and not as built as a Frank Thomas or a Barry Bonds turned out to be, these are guys that could eventually set pitchers up. And I call it the Manny Ramirez rule, mm-hmm. where they simply don't offer, or they'll even swing at certain pitches knowing they can't do much, just to get the pitcher to move back into their zone and where they want to make contact. And something that I saw in Yelich last year where I said, he's setting them up, and he capitalized. He got advantageous counts. He was working so much 2-1, 3-1 last year. It was insane. And then, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the amount of home runs he hit on 2-1, 3-1, I'm willing to say it was pretty dramatic, and dramatic compared to the rest of the league, because that's where he did the most damage. And that's the evolution of Yelich that I saw that popped him from a 20 home run hitter to a 36 home run hitter. I don't anticipate 36. I don't anticipate the fly ball, home run fly ball rate, older. What was it last year? Was it like 35?
Yeah, it was 35%. It was historically stupendous. It led the league, and it was like one of the top five marks ever.
Right. So absolutely fine saying there's no way for that to be there. But again, this is a guy who was a notorious ground ball hitter for the most part and did move his, change his swing a little bit and launch angle. Another one of these launch angle darlings with Yonder Alonso and Jose Ramirez, who you're talking about. So he changed that, but his approach and his identifying what the pitcher's trying to do and the ability to capitalize off it is why I strongly believe Yelich will maintain a 25 to 30 home run rate, or home runs total, I should say, for the duration of the season. What do you think about that?
Number one, one of my favorite guys, people that have listened to my work for years have always drafted him and had good results. Last year, they got great results from Yelich. Number two, he's built just like me, so I'm always a fan. That's a tall, slender guy.
Yeah, he is. He's 6'3".
Yeah, 6'3", 195, they say, which I kind of doubt. I'm 6'3", 180, so we're very similar. I'm actually
6'3", 220, by the way.
I'm actually 6'4". Jeff and I go back and forth to that all the time. I am taller.
I think it's the point of your head. That doesn't.
Maybe. Well, if I had hair, though, I'd have another inch.
No, see, people always think that, but hair actually deflects.
Okay, whatever.
It's true.
Full of it.
Totally true.
Back to Yelich, who has a fabulous head of hair.
Yes.
He is. He's very interesting. He can't repeat the home run to fly ball ratio. No one's ever lived has. So he's not. And you are correct. This is the interesting thing with him. You are correct. His ground ball rate was 63% as a rookie. It was 52% last year.
Yeah.
Okay, so the 52% is still too high. 63% is absurd.
Right.
I wish Billy Hamilton would do that. Yeah. So we're still talking about a fellow with a 2.2 ground ball to fly ball ratio. That doesn't, by any form of analysis, ever lead to 35 home runs. Impossible. Why did it with him? Well, we talked about the home run to fly ball ratio, but there's also something very interesting. Though he doesn't hit fly balls, he hits the ball extremely hard. He always has.
Yes.
His fly ball launch, his launch angle leading to the fly ball angle is in the sweet spot for home runs. Okay. So I'm not going to get all pull protractor out here and confuse people. But the bottom line is this. There is a range of fly balls, obviously, this angle versus that angle. The angle that he hits the majority of his fly balls in are right in the prime home run fly ball angle range. So even though he doesn't hit as many fly balls as a league average player, a higher percentage of the fly balls he does hit are at the right angle to actually end up as a home run versus a fly out to short center field. So he's very interesting, Jeff, because we're getting all these newfangled measures and everything. And when you really start diving into information, which, again, if this happened 5 years ago, we'd laugh it off. Be like, he's got zero chance to hit 30 home runs again. Joe Mauer years ago.
Right.
When he hit those 28. There is a chance that he hits 30 home runs again. It's a small chance, okay? But there is a chance he does it because of the angle of his fly balls, with the angle of the way he's grooved his swing and the velocity he puts on the exit and everything like that. He does have a chance to hit 30 again.
I think that is very accurate as well. I think that another thing with Christian Yelich as opposed to other hitters is that hits left-handed pitching very well, gets on base versus left-handed pitching. It's another thing. When you're a guy, Jose Ramirez is a good example, actually, between he's hits both ways, but predominantly one way. You know, these guys that can't do well off left-handers, and late in games what happens is they bring in the lefty to face you. You know, if you're able to hit Yelich at 10 home runs against lefties last year, I mean, you're able – that's your 36 right there. A lot of guys would hit 22 versus righties and only hit 4-6 maybe against the lefties. When you're able to generate that kind of power and that kind of extra base prowess against the southpaws when you're a lefty hitter specifically, that's all your extra right there. And that's something we look at in the daily game, and we look at when, you know, we'll get into it here on fantasyguru.com on the Fantasy Baseball League podcast. You know, Ray and I start looking at, all right, what's the projected rotations? How many lefties versus righties these guys will face, you know, and start diving into the splits. We got articles already up and at fantasyguru.com talking about this. So it's another element, another thing that makes me more secure in Yelich over the others. And for me, Christian Yelich is a top six pick this year, and only behind those guys. The only guy is behind Altuve, Arenado, Trout, Betts, and this is funny because I do have Trey Turner up ahead of that. And the thing is, Turner's another guy we'll get into in a future podcast that I like Turner a lot. He never is going to be the player that we thought he was going to be, or some people, I should say, we never thought that, but especially with power numbers. But I do think the speed is elite. I think the contact rates are pretty elite there as well. All right. So officially, did you say who your number three overall?
I didn't. It depends on the setup. Lindor, Ramirez, or Arenado.
No. We don't do that here.
Well, you have to. 10-team, 15-team, three outfielders, five, mix, you know, middle infield, no middle infield. They're all different.
I don't care. If you had one third pick to save your life, I don't care what the
setup. Arenado.
There we go. That's easy. I agree. That's how crazy it is. I'm surprised that we agree that much. But that's just the guy. I have no qualms about it. I think there are so many outfielders later. I look at third base is a position in which there's just – after you get the top-heavy guys in Ramirez, Arenado, Bregman, Chris Bryant, who we'll talk about – I want to talk about him, you know, in a couple weeks or so. After you get to these levels, it's all just a bunch of projects and hopefuls and rebounds and all this kind of stuff. So one other player before we burn out of here, Ray Flowers, that I want to talk about is JT Realmuto. Mm-hmm. Because as of this podcast, he's still in Miami. He's going to be in Miami until like 2037, I have a feeling, at this point. But we'll see what ends up with him. There's so much hoopla surrounding this guy. You and I talked off air a little bit about it. Like, it's insane how much value this guy is generating just because of the news cycles. Like, it's not because of the type of player. He's a good player, very solid, very good player. But my God, you would think he's up there with Bryce Harper or Manny Machado.
Yeah, it's interesting because he is the number one fantasy option at the position at catcher. I would agree with that. But it's fascinating to me that we've almost morphed him into being, you know, someone that I don't think he is in the fantasy game and certainly in the real world. You know, Buster Posey used to be the bee's knees, right? Okay. I got a news flash for you. Buster Posey for 6 years was better than Realmuto was last year. From 2012 to 2017, all of Posey's numbers were better than what Realmuto did last year. Okay. Did we ever, I mean, in the fantasy game, do we ever follow ourselves Posey? Maybe, because he produced that batting average. But I certainly know in the real world that if you bring up the name of Buster Posey, I don't think we'd ever heard at any point, even when he was vying for MVP awards, this idea that we're going to be able to get two or three of a team's top 10 draft picks in a trade and all this kind of stuff. He has dominated the news cycle, has Realmuto. It's almost a daily occurrence where we have some report of some team, three-way trade, all these kind of things. He's arbitration eligible for another couple of years, so he's not a free agent until 2021. I get the excitement, Jeff, but to me, he's just a really good catcher, and I think too much is being made of that.
Yeah, and when you look at it, I think we need to do a whole show on catchers because, we need to do a whole show on it because how you treat the catcher spot, especially in two catcher leagues, there are people make huge mistakes when it comes to that spot, in my opinion, but maybe a conversation for another time. Thing with Realmuto is, what does he do? It used to be the thing like, okay, he'll give you a solid batting average, not going to hurt you batting average, it's going to hit you around 280. Okay, great. And then, oh, man, look at this. He chips in, 10 stolen bases. Well, he hasn't done that. He did it once out of 5 years. He did the 12 stolen bases back in 2016. That's it. 8-3 last year. Catchers aren't going to run, and they especially don't run the more games behind the plate that they serve. So that's almost out the window. The power is – he doesn't have a ton of power. I mean, 21 home runs is an all-time high for him. I don't think anywhere he goes, he's going to be much more than a 20 home run guy. Catchers will hit home runs. You can get 20 home run hitters behind the plate and they'll drive in some runs in the interim, but usually they cost you in batting average. And I just don't see how this guy is so highly thought of in the fantasy game. Maybe for a pitching staff, it's okay. And you look at his catcher ERA and stuff. This is nothing good either, man. So I'm having a real tough time with Realmuto and why there's like this sweepstakes surrounding
him. Yeah, especially in, like we're saying, in the fantasy game. It's really interesting, and this goes back as well to what we were talking about a little bit earlier in the podcast. If people missed it, I'll just rewind it. Wilson Contreras has an ADP at the NFBC since the 1st of January. His ADP is 136. Realmuto's is 56. Okay, so we're talking an 80-pick difference. Look at what Contreras did in 2017. Look at what Realmuto did last year. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Yet one guy is 80 picks behind the other guy because he had a down season last year. That goes back to our main point. Don't just look at the numbers that are on the page, the fantasy numbers from the previous season. There's more to a player than that, Jeff.
And what are they – I mean, realistically, what – I don't see the Realmuto thing. Like, I'm looking at catcher ERA and pitch framing, so I don't even see – he's not even up there here.
Yeah.
In these numbers here, Ray Flowers, and it's not like he's a great defensive catcher either, where you get a guy like Yadier Molina and you go, oh, okay, even Yasmani Grandal, and you're like, oh, okay, now I see the value to a team. I see the defensive value. I see the value of the pitching staff, and he can hit and or get on base. Okay, fair enough. Now I understand it. Do you have any kind of thought on where Realmuto lands?
I mean, it's so varied at this point. I don't know.
How do you go into the draft?
Yeah, I mean, Realmuto, I look at it this way. Wherever he goes, he plays, 80% of the time. Playing time's not going to take a hit, right? His skills should translate to virtually any park. As you noted, he's not a 30 home run hitter, so that doesn't matter overly. And whatever team he ends up on, the odds of that team being a better offensive squad than like the Marlins have been or were last year is very high. So there's very few spots where I could envision him being where it's not at least equal, if not slightly better. So I don't think there's much concern with him. It's kind of like Craig Kimbrell. We're still waiting for Craig Kimbrell to sign. I'm still drafting Kimbrell the same way as I would. Wherever he signs, he closes, he saves games. I think it's the same thing with Realmuto.
Kimbrell go back to the Red Sox?
Could. They said they wouldn't pay him, but they certainly have a need.
Yeah,
makes sense.
It would be weird for him. Just weird on him on a non-contender at this point in his career.
Yeah,
You know what I mean? Because why – he can get money maybe from – I don't know why anybody pays closers, by the way. If you're not a contender specifically, if you don't want like a postseason tested guy, like what's the sense in that? Just bring up your own guy and get him battle tested when it's time for you to make the playoffs. But nevertheless, Ray, we do have some questions from the Peanut Gallery. Are you ready to take some questions? We asked everybody to tweet at baseball guys at Jeff_Manns. That's where you guys can follow us on Twitter. And Matt DeMarco wants to know, what are some good stats to look at to determine breakout starting pitchers? That's a whole show we get into there. But what do you like to look when you're looking in the later rounds, we'll say, and we're looking for a breakout, a guy who hasn't hit his ceiling yet, what are we looking for?
And I think that this is actually great timing without the user knowing that. Tomorrow at Fantasy Guru, we're going to release Pitching Targets, the Ideal Hurler. And that whole article breaks down, what the ideal hurler is. And it talks about the various components that you're looking at. I always say the trinity of pitching is high strikeouts, low walks, high ground ball. That's kind of a baseline. You need to look beyond ERA. That's terrible. Look at FIP, XFIP, Sierra, DERA, all these other measures that are in there. Those are also part of how to analyze a pitcher 2.0. That article is already available. But, yeah, I would look for the Pitching Target, the Ideal Hurler, that was released Wednesday at Fantasy Guru. Goes into more depth. But basically, you want to figure the health in. But beyond that, ground ball rates, strikeout rates, walk rates, hard hit ball rates are a very good place to look, as well as left on base percentages. If that number swings wildly from season to season, it's usually based on something outside the control of the pitcher, meaning it'll stabilize in the following year.
Absolutely. And in addition to some of that, I mean, what Ray was talking about with FIP and XFIP, I mean, comparing that to the ERA is always a good idea. You can look at, all right, who had a lucky, who had an unlucky year, you know, and you look for somebody who was just unlucky. You want ground ball rates, obviously, you know, if they – in historical information, like even going to their minor league, if a pitcher's been there for a couple of years, what do they generate? A lot of ground balls. Do they miss bats? That's the holy grail, is missing bats. And then you could look at pitch movement, things like that. A new pitch. Sometimes in spring training, we'll see pitchers that, hey, I developed a changeup or a new grip on my curveball or whatever. We talked about anybody who leaves the Pirates. Essentially, is you know what I mean? Like Garrett Cole, like, had the velocity spike and movement change from going to Houston, and to the point that Trevor Bauer called him out and actually accused Houston of doing something because the spin rates were so much higher. Right? Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So anybody goes to the Astros where they cheat is always a good thing. New ballparks, obviously, with the players going from a specific team. One of the players that I identified this year is Chris Archer. And obviously he goes to Pittsburgh, but I really like pitchers that going from the AL East specifically, because the AL East is just, man, you get the freaking Yankees and Red Sox, and it's just so much.
Just a grind.
The Blue Jays have been stacked for years, and they've, you know, kind of gone nowhere because they have to compete with this. And the Rays were hot at the end of last season. They started getting hot. So the Orioles have had Machado and Chris Davis when he was actually good. And this is a tough division. And going from them to the NL Central, where you get everybody rebuilding, and yeah, Goldie's there and Bryant is healthy, but it's not that big of a deal. A little bit more friendly ballpark and these kind of things. I love the wipeout slider. Guys with premium pitches, a guy with a pitch that can just dominate a ball game, like a Chris Archer, I absolutely love. And going from American League to the National League always gives you an uptick in strikeouts because you get to face the pitcher pretty much a free square in bingo. It's like that N column, plus N National League is what you we would call. So, you know, looking at those things and players that change environments and new pitches, Ray, it's always something to that we hear whispers of also. But you want players that have been unlucky, kind of, you know, they've been around, they generate swings and misses. Maybe their strikeout rate's only 8.6 instead of 9 for 9, you know. And then but they have a ground ball rate of over 45%. You know, and guys like that if they improve just subtly, just slightly, and get a little bit better competition in a nicer ballpark, all of a sudden you're talking about a guy that goes from 160, 170 strikeouts to 190, possibly even challenging 200. So anything else with the
– Yeah, one last thing. We all talk about strikeout rate per nine because it's the vernacular we're all familiar with. Swinging strike rate is probably something that the newer person isn't really looking at. But swinging strike rate might even be more important than strikeout per nine, so give that a look.
Yeah, I like – personally – I like strikeout percentage, walk percentage more. Like, mm-hmm. to me, those are I'm much more comfortable talking in those terms than K per nine and all that, mm-hmm. especially per nine now.
Yeah, per four and a half.
It's just insane. Like, how many – they don't – how many starts does it take to get a starting pitcher to go nine innings?
Two, three. Like,
yeah, at least two, right? I mean, it's so absurd. Give us a breakout starting pitcher.
Can't do that. Yeah, I got to save it for the article, Jeff. My name to my claim to fame is always picking that one guy out.
Give us a guy besides that guy. Give us somebody else. Give somebody you have your eye on then.
Somebody I have my eye on. Okay.
Yeah, somebody that you think, you know, nobody's talking about. Give us Luis Perdomo. Who's the
Luis Perdomo? Well, it's not Eduardo Rodriguez. I would say that Colin McHugh. Did you just draft Colin McHugh?
Someone did in the
FSTA recently. Colin McHugh is a name. He was a solid starter, got moved to the bullpen, had a ton of success there in the bullpen. They're looking like he's going to be a starter. Now, that could change. They could still bring back Keuchel or do something different at the Astros. But as of now, it looks like McHugh's going to get a chance to start. He's an Astro. They do all that advanced analysis, spin rates, all that kind of stuff. Got a nice fastball, drops the curveball in there as well. That is a player that I was really high on and very disappointed to see him moved into the bullpen for the last 2 years. Colin McHugh is a name to remember.
And not only that, Colin McHugh, Naperville, Illinois.
Right? Yeah, well, there you go.
Stomping grounds. I think he was a Naperville North guy as well. So same school, Jerry Hairston, my childhood friend who had a nice little career across the major leagues played in. All right, I like that one. I'll stick with Chris Archer here going into 2019. You're going to hear his name a lot on my sleepers and breakout lists as far as starting pitchers are concerned. Ray, anything else you want to talk about? Any doctor appointments coming up?
No doctor appointment, but a phone appointment. I got to go get my new iPhone. My current one is exploding on me as we speak, Jeff. I'm going to lose the Jeff Man's face, unfortunately, because I think I'm going to have to get another size case.
What do you mean? You mean just your case or you're getting a whole new phone?
I got to get a whole new phone and it's not going to fit the case.
Oh, by the way, Ray Flowers has a purple case with kittens on it. It literally looks like something a 13-year-old girl would have.
Purple case. The kittens are on the phone. It's not a purple phone case with kittens on it. The kitten sticker is on the phone.
It's so much worse. That makes it so much worse.
Maybe it's not. I don't know.
No, definitely is. There's no maybe it isn't. It's a really terrible thing that you've
done. Thank you. Appreciate
you. Yeah, and so you're getting a new cell phone.
Yeah, get a new cell phone. I'm determining whether or not I want to do Apple or do something else. I'm not a big fan of Apple at the moment.
Why don't you – you're not good with technology. This is, well, widely known. Everybody knows.
People say that all the time, yet we know that's not the case, Jeff. But go ahead.
I think it is the case. I've had an iPhone my whole life. I've never – my whole life. Mm-hmm. I wasn't born with them. I'm too old for that. Mm-hmm. Did you why don't – are you backed up to the cloud though, Ray? Why would
no.
you install the picture?
I'm not backed up to the cloud, but I am backed up to the computer. I went and did that fully, so all of the information is saved on my iTunes account on my computer.
Okay. Why not to the cloud? You don't trust in the cloud?
I don't trust anyone with my info, Jeff, just me.
This guy, conspiracy theories. Those of you who follow us from Tommy G, you guys think that Tommy G's nuts, which he is, by the way. Ray Flowers is a close second.
I'm rational with my conspiracy theories, Jeff. Come on.
You're what about the conspiracy?
I'm rational with them. I'm measured with them. I will listen and form an opinion that's not held by people with three teeth living in the North Pole.
Where do you stand on reptilian shapeshifters?
I think there are many, many stories about reptilians being on this planet. Mm-hmm. I tend to think that seems pretty far-fetched. You'd have to have some pretty fancy technology to hide your face if you actually looked like a crocodile.
So insane. All right, guys. Well, you subscribe for fantasy baseball. You get Ray's conspiracies. You get a little prostate exams and iTunes conversation as well. All right. Remember, head to fantasyguru.com. The early bird pricing. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand, prices are there for the time being. They are only going to go up. The people that set our prices which we have a say-so in, but very little, let's be honest. They know that as we get to the months, once spring training starts and we get into March, they know that, well, your demand and your need for the rankings and the full season of content is going to go up. So they're going to raise the prices. So get in now. Trust us on that. It will not get any cheaper. The next time it'll be this cheap will be the month of June or July when half the season's already over. So that's going to be a big problem. So check out fantasyguru.com again for the full season right there. Remember to subscribe to this podcast. Leave your comments. We appreciate it. Each and every one of you leaving comments and ratings and all that. So even if you don't like it, send these two balls talking about prostate exams. Who cares about that? Follow Ray Flowers at Baseball Guys on Twitter. Follow me at Jeff_Manz. The Jeff Manz on Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook. If you're into that. Ray, you don't do any of those stuff.
Nah. I'm just too much work to be done, Jeff. I don't have time for those frivolities.
Too much work to be done. For the great baseball guy himself, Ray Flowers. This is Jeff Manz, Fantasy Baseball Elite. We'll see you next time. Deuces.